From Iowa Public Radio News, I'm Ben Kiefer. This is The Exchange. Happy first day of fall, 2010. This hour, we're marking the coming of autumn by examining Iowa's climate on several fronts. State climatologist Harry Hilliker will join us to reflect on the summer past and to look ahead to what kind of weather and harvest fall is likely to bring. Then we'll talk with Joe Walsh, Deputy Director of Iowa Workforce Development. He'll give us the latest picture of Iowa's climate for those seeking jobs or workers. And finally, Carrie Jensen, president of the Iowa Association of Realtors, tells us about Iowa's housing climate. Join us with your questions about the weather for state climatologist Harry Hilliker right after this news. It's The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Great to have you with us over this noon hour. Autumn is literally blowing in today. What a wind out there across the state. The first full day of fall today. So this hour, we're marking the occasion by examining Iowa's climate on several fronts. Later in the hour, Joe Walsh will be with us, Deputy Director of Iowa Workforce Development. He'll give us the latest picture of Iowa's climate for those seeking jobs or workers. Then Carrie Jensen, president of the Iowa Association of Realtors, tells us about Iowa's housing climate. But first, we're joined by state climatologist Harry Hilliker. We want to reflect on the summer past, look ahead to what kind of weather and harvest the fall is likely to bring. Harry Hilliker joining us by phone. Good afternoon to you, Harry.
Oh, good afternoon.
We want to have our listeners join us for this first half hour as well. We know there are bad or weird weather experiences among our listeners. Share those with us this half hour, your bad or weird weather experiences. 1-866-780-9100. The Exchange at iowapublicradio.org. Our email, we're also on Twitter, at IPR Talk. Well, as we consider the summer, Harry, this just out yesterday, I believe, the Weather Channel ranks the 2010 Iowa summer as the third worst in the nation. Do you agree that our summer weather deserves that rating?
Well, possibly, I guess, one of the things. And certainly if you're in the areas that were flooded, like the Ames area in particular, in northeastern Iowa with the Maquoketa River Basin and Lake Delhi and so forth, and other places around the state as well, probably wouldn't have much quibble at all with that ranking. In fact, you might say it should be higher. And overall, certainly a very, very wet summer in Iowa, and also a very humid one. We didn't have much in the way of really extremely high temperatures. 98 degrees, I think, is the highest official reading we had in the state for actual temperature, which isn't that bad. But obviously a very humid summer, and in fact, we still have that today. Unusually warm and humid for this first full day of fall here on September 23rd.
Now, let's talk a little bit more about these torrential rainfalls experienced in many places in the state, mostly in July and August, causing some localized flash flooding disasters, most notably, of course, near Delhi, where that private dam collapsed. In Ames, there were floods that knocked out the city's water system, causing millions of dollars of damage. Des Moines engineers had to keep their eyes on the Sailorville Reservoir as it was at the top of the spillway for weeks. Swollen rivers straining the levees in the Birdland and Central Place areas. Also flash floods in mobile home parks near creeks in Des Moines and Ottumwa. So was there any rhyme or reason to why we had these torrential rainfalls in certain parts of the state?
Basically, it's one of those, you might say, luck of the draw, so to speak. Iowa certainly was in the middle of the storm track, or very close to that storm track, you know, much of the summer. And if you look at rainfall plots over the whole U.S., we were basically, you know, the epicenter right over the state of Iowa where the heaviest rains occurred, much lesser amounts all around us. So we're just kind of where the action was and stayed that way. Oddly enough, the wettest month, based on total amount of rain, was the month of June, even though that was probably the month that brought us the least amount of flooding. It just had to do with how that rain occurred during the month, not so concentrated overnight, short events as we had during that third week of July in northeast Iowa with the Maquoketa River, and then the second week of August in central Iowa, where we had three consecutive nights of very heavy rainfall. And fortunately, the rain in June, while there was a lot of it, was a bit more spread out, both in time and space, and not as much flooding that month.
And what's going on in the atmosphere to determine whether you get a torrential rainfall, several inches coming down in a couple hours, or whether it comes down slower? Tell us what conditions have to be up there for that heavy amount to come down in such a short time.
Basically, obviously, I guess start with you have to have the moisture source, and we've certainly had that all summer long with all the humidity you have. Much of that coming up from the Gulf of Mexico, but also a lot of local contribution as well from very rapidly growing and transpiring local vegetation that actually adds quite a bit of moisture to the air in addition to what's coming up from the Gulf. And so the moisture is certainly the first key. And typically the really heavy, intense rains, well, this would actually be the case for really any rain at all, but you want a pretty strong flow of air coming up from the Gulf, and oftentimes at the nighttime hours especially, you get what's called a low-level jet stream a few thousand feet above the ground, very strong winds, sometimes 50, 60 miles an hour, bringing just tremendous amount of moisture northward. And but also, the moisture by itself is enough. You need some kind of boundary or air mass change that's going to cause that moisture to rise in the atmosphere. And as the air rises and cools, it's going to start to saturate, and can water start to condense and start getting rainfall. And we've been, say, very near where the action is, so to speak, all summer long, where there's been a kind of a quasi-stationary frontal boundary, which means a separation of warm, humid air to our south and cooler, somewhat drier air to our north. And that boundary is what the focus is for where that rain's going to occur. Mm-hmm. And it's just been, Iowa's been the preferential place for that to be this summer. And as is often the case, if somebody's getting too much rain, usually there's somebody else that's missing it. And really, a lot of the southern and southeastern parts of the U.S. have been experiencing drought this summer, and also a lot of heat to go along with that. So pretty bad conditions in the opposite sense in other parts of the country. But that's really quite typical. If we're very wet, someone else is usually very dry. Mm-hmm. And that's actually had a very similar pattern back in 1993 with that. Although this year we've been much warmer in Iowa than was the case in 93.
Mm-hmm. Exchange listeners, we want to hear from you. Did you experience one of those 8-inch rain events this summer? Share your summer weather story. Did you get stuck somewhere? 1-866-780-9100. The Exchange at iowapublicradio.org. A personal experience about the weather we had this summer. 1-866-780-9100. Now, what is the fastest rain can come out of the sky? In terms of volume?
Well, it can be very, very quick indeed. There's probably even higher amounts than this, but one's actually been falling on a rain gauge where it could be recorded officially. We've had over an inch of rain in just 5 minutes' time. Mm-hmm. In Iowa, and fortunately we don't typically sustain that kind of rainfall rate for very long, but it can happen very, very quickly indeed. And in fact, we had one event this summer which actually did reach a rain gauge, and this would have been one of the events back in June up near Rowan, Wright County. A gauge there reported essentially 4 inches of rain in 1 hour, and what was ended up being like an 8-hour overnight total, but certainly a very large amount of rain in a very short amount of time, and that sort of rain is going to obviously cause flooding. Fortunately, in the case of the June event, not a real large area involved with the heavy rain, but it certainly did cause some very severe flooding in the localized area in parts of Wright and counties downstream from there.
Mm-hmm. Of course, these torrential rainfalls leading to all kinds of implications, problems on the ground. For us, heavy rains causing storm and waste, sewer backups in the Des Moines area and elsewhere in the state. Also read, Harry, so much rain fell in Iowa this summer that it was bad for fish. Flooding threatened the state fish hatchery near Lake Rathbun. I guess the wastewater, these treatment plants are just overloaded, and they have to dump some of the waste. They have to get rid of it, right?
Right, yeah. There's only can handle so much water, and a lot of cities, it's rather expensive to do this, you know, trying to separate the storm sewer completely from the sanitary sewer system. lost for words there for a moment.
That's right.
And a lot of places, those are kind of built together. And very quickly it overwhelms water treatment plants when that happens. And so, you know, efforts to kind of separate those two so you can handle a big rain a little bit easier. But that's a very expensive proposition to do that. And so oftentimes you do have to have what they call an extra or kind of an overload discharge going on into the streams. I guess the only good news out of that is it is somewhat diluted because of all that huge volume of water we're talking about, but still, still not a pleasant thing to think about.
Of course, when we get severe weather, extreme weather of any kind, be it in the winter or this summer, some are saying, you know, because climate change, global climate change, so much in the news, could this extreme weather have anything to do with global climate change?
Yeah, certainly could be. It's one of those things, there's never easy answers on that, and many of the climate change scenarios would indicate that chances are it would have more rainfall in a, you might say, a greenhouse-enhanced atmosphere, and perhaps more intense rainfall as well because of a warmer atmosphere. And certainly what we had this summer actually fits that pretty well. Some of our other recent summers didn't fit that scenario quite so well, like 1993, for example, which is still a record year as far as flooding and rainfall in the state. It was actually a very cool year that time around, so wasn't quite the typical greenhouse scenario event then, but this year is kind of fits the bill a little bit better. But still, so much variability in our day-to-day and year-to-year and decade-to-decade climate, it's often very hard, almost impossible, to really pin down, say, well, this is the cause or that was the cause, but it's certainly open for plenty of speculation.
State climatologist Harry Hilliker joining us for this first half hour, reflecting on our summer weather, and we'll look forward here to the fall in just a moment. Iowa, third worst summer weather in the nation, that according to the Weather Channel. Harry, does that translate into bad weather for crops? Have they been faring well in our summer weather?
Well, kind of yes and no. Obviously, a lot of crops, too much water. They're not going to do very well if they're underwater, which certainly in many areas that's happened frequently this year, this growing season. One thing that's helped us, though, actually in this case, is those higher temperatures we've been talking about, and that allows us to dry a little bit more quickly between rain events and get the soil dried out a little more quickly as well. And as long as it's not getting extremely hot, the crops will do reasonably well with those higher temperatures. And that's helped us tremendously, saying this year versus 1993, where we had, you know, a lot of rain as well, and but just a very, very cool growing season then. The crops just never got enough sunlight, never got enough growth going, and had really disastrous yields that year on a regional basis, not just Iowa, but all across the Midwest, that was the case. So this year, the higher temperatures actually helped us somewhat, and that crops are growing pretty well. When the rain does stop, anyway, and but still, not going to be the you know, ideal situations. Maybe some of the better drained higher ground may have about the best yields I've ever seen, but a lot of other territories, especially low lying areas have been flooded. You know, little or no yield whatsoever. So we can't, you know, weigh out the whole state. You know, I guess we have to wait and see how it is, but probably not going to be seeing record yields this year, which has gotten to be kind of commonplace in the last few years, but certainly not the ideal conditions this year. But for the most part, on a statewide basis, doing reasonably well as far as corn and soybeans go.
Your questions about the weather for climatologist Harry Hilliker this half hour, 1-866-780-9100, the exchange at iowapublicradio.org. Bob in Des Moines writes an email and wonders if the concentration of corn per acre is putting more moisture into the atmosphere and causing some of these larger, heavier rain events.
It certainly could be, and several things going on there. Obviously, with the corn yield like it is, producing much more corn per acre than used to be the case, and that's largely coming from more plants per acre. Not so much that the individual plants are producing more corn than they used to, but we're able to plant a lot much more closer together, and all that corn is able to draw a lot of moisture out of the ground and transpire that into the air during you know, the active growing season, late June through July and into August. And when you compare what corn can transpire to, say, a more, you know, like a pasture ground, something like that, kind of just change the cycle of how you're cycling water through the soil over the course of the season. And any kind of row crop that's planted in the spring, whether it be corn or soybeans, is basically you're kind of transferring some of the soil moisture. You're allowing to stay in the soil a little bit later in the summer, and therefore you have higher potential for evaporation in July and August, especially the late summer, than would be the case, say, if you had a perennial crop like a pasture ground or something like that, where you're depleting moisture from the first time it greens up in the spring throughout the summer. And so overall, yeah, our humidity probably is higher because of all the row crops that we've got than would be the case if we didn't have that sort of vegetation.
Harry Hilliker, what are the key weather factors we have to keep in mind as we look forward, as farmers prepare to harvest? What are the weather conditions? We have precipitation. Of course, we want to keep those crops dry until we get them in, right?
Yeah, definitely would like to see that, because obviously you're not going to be doing much in the way of any additional growth or development at this late point in the season. So rainfall is to be a hindrance rather than a help as we get to this point in the season. And unfortunately, we're seeing a lot of rain here recently. Mount Air, Ringgold County, southwest Iowa, had over 6 inches of rain, for example, on this past Saturday night. And then just last night, some parts of northwest Iowa, especially Sioux County and the parts of Lyon and Osceola counties, well over 4 inches up there, which, you know, don't want to see that kind of rain any time of year, but especially not right now. So things that, you know, start drying out. And as far as the outlook goes, as far as what's expected, there's a so-called La Nina weather pattern where the tropical Pacific is unusually cool. If we look back in the record books, other years we had the same pattern to see what kind of weather Iowa got. And we have a very strong tendency for warmer than usual weather during the fall months in Iowa when La Nina is around. And so overall, we'd expect the remainder of this month, October, November, to be averaging warmer than what's typical. Doesn't mean it's going to be that way every single day, but certainly more frequent than usual.
Wetter as well?
On the precipitation end things, La Nina actually would somewhat favor a little bit drier than usual. However, it's not a very strong tendency. The temperature one's pretty good odds, like 80-85% chance of that happening. The rainfall end of things, it's maybe 55% chance of below normal rainfall for the fall season. But right now, we're certainly very wet for much of the state, the exception being some parts of east central and northeast Iowa, which are a bit on the dry side right now, but really not causing problems in that regard, but drier than elsewhere in the state.
Mm-hmm. Now,
so probably a warmer fall than average, hopefully a little drier, but I'm not very confident on that, given how wet things have been recently.
Well, currently we have across the state, of course, where the storm is as well, but where the storms have not reached yet in the state, we have winds 20, even 30, up to 40 miles an hour predicted for today. That could be damaging to crops as well, couldn't it?
Yeah, it could be, and although sometimes it gets a little bit later in the fall, especially during the month of, November is actually the peak month for having really high winds as far as just large low-pressure systems start traveling across the plain states. November, though, being the key month for that to occur. October, basically just the later we get in the fall, the more likely it is we have really strong, widespread, long-lasting wind storms. And there is a lot of problems with stalk rot and things like that going on across the state, so wind could be a bit bigger of an issue this year than others. Good news is the crops across the state are, you know, progressing very, very well as far as maturity goes, and basically either ready to harvest now or will be very, very soon, which is a huge change from what happened last year. Last year we had the third coolest summer on record, and actually had just perfect weather in September, but crops that weren't ready to be harvested just weren't ready yet.
Mm-hmm.
And when October came along, we had the coldest weather, coldest October in 85 years, wettest October ever. And so what was already kind of a bad situation as far as a crop that was immature became much, much worse. We had our latest harvest in basically about 60 years in the state 1 year ago. So this year, despite how wet things have been, We should not see a repeat of what happened last year with such a delayed harvest.
Tell us about the front that's moving across the state, across the Midwest, or as we speak.
Yeah, there's a cold front coming across right now, kind of located over eastern Nebraska. Be moving eastward and southeastward through the day today. And as it does so, well, the rain we're already seeing over the western Iowa is somewhat associated with that front. But chances of severe weather coming up for this afternoon as that front moves through the state, and so possibly some hail, high winds, and that sort of thing. And there was some of that yesterday. In fact, Rock Rapids up in far northwest Iowa had up to baseball-sized hail reported yesterday. So we already have a history of that sort of thing going on. Hasn't got developed quite yet today, but that is a possibility later on. And then once that front moves through, we'll be much cooler for the next several days, although actually getting temperatures more down to what's normal for this time of year, which would be highs in, say, the low 70s or so. And so we're looking at those kind of temperatures for the most part over the next several days after that front passes through.
Baseball-sized hail already, and earlier this week we had golf ball-sized hail in the Cedar Rapids area, I know. How can you get hail of that size when actually temperatures on the ground are 10, 20, 30 degrees higher?
Yeah, basically several things going on. Kind of the ideal conditions, you'd like to have what's called a freezing level. You know, how far up in the atmosphere you have to go to reach freezing temperatures. You want that to be unusually low, so the hail doesn't have as far to go, as far to much warm air to fall through to melt on the way down. But basically, the larger you can get that hail from very strong thunderstorm updrafts, you know, the better the chance is that hail will survive that trip through that much warmer air all the way down to the surface. And what we had this past weekend, Saturday afternoon, Saturday evening in particular, when the last kind of round of severe weather, very relatively cool temperatures at ground level, and afternoon highs were only low to mid-50s, so there wasn't a lot of, you know, comparatively speaking, really warm air to surface to melt that hail as it was coming down. So some areas did get, unfortunately, some hail at that time, and as mentioned already, a few areas in northwest Iowa saw it yesterday once again. And it's just one of those things, it just kills you to see it this time of year when you got crops out there that are, you know, ready to be harvested and didn't have them, you know, lose them at the last minute like that from a hailstorm. It's just heartbreaking when that occurs.
Any, we've got less than a minute left, Harry Hilliker. Any hints about what our winter may be like?
Unfortunately, La Nina favors just the opposite for the winter as it does for the fall months. So the odds would be favoring colder than normal and wetter than normal for the mid-winter months, December, January, February, even into March. And we've already had three consecutive colder than normal winters in Iowa prior to this one, and four in a row that have been snowier than usual. So this winter may be, you know, no guarantees of it, but looks to be following that same pattern.
Okay. State climatologist Harry Hilliker, thank you so much for this conversation. Thanks for joining us.
You're welcome.
And state climatologist Harry Hilliker there. We'll follow up after the break with examining Iowa's climate on a different front. The latest picture on Iowa's climate for those seeking jobs or workers coming up. Joe Walsh, Deputy Director of Iowa Workforce Development. When we return, this is The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. A very windy and in some parts of the state already stormy first day of fall here in Iowa. This is The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. A new center at the University of Northern Iowa seeks to inform Iowa school kids about the Holocaust and genocide. Tomorrow on this program, we'll find out about this center and speak with an author who profiled concentration camp survivors who came to Des Moines. Then we'll get an update on the impacts that modern-day human trafficking have in Iowa and efforts to stop that tomorrow, Friday, on The Exchange. Today, happy first day of fall 2010. We're marking the coming autumn by examining Iowa's climate on several fronts in our first half hour. State climatologist Harry Hilliker talked about the summer that we had with the torrential rains, a look ahead to the fall and even to the winter. And a little later in the hour, we'll have Carrie Jensen, president of the Iowa Association of Realtors, tell us about Iowa's housing climate. But first of all, before that, we're marking the coming of autumn by examining Iowa's climate on the job front. Those seeking jobs or workers, we're joined by Joe Walsh, Deputy Director at Iowa Workforce Development, joining us by phone. Joe, welcome to our program.
Thank you very much.
The just released August numbers on unemployment, what do they show?
Well, we have been we've been holding steady here in the state, sticking at 6.8%, and it's a little bit frustrating to see our numbers sticking there, because I think we are seeing some good signs in the economy as well and some hope.
Mm-hmm. How many Iowans are out of work?
The estimates, there's two different things there. We've got the number of people who are actually drawing unemployment benefits compared to the estimates of people who are out of work. I think the estimates right now show that it's about 113,000 people who are out of work right now.
Mm-hmm. So comparing these numbers with last year, you said 6.8 currently. Last year, is it up or pretty much the same?
Well, what we're seeing it's fairly stagnant on that front compared to where we saw where we were last year. But the good news that we're seeing in all of this is that the number of new claims that are being filed are down substantially. Through the first part of this year, through 2010, we've had 213,000 new unemployment claims filed. That compares with, through the same period of time last year, 333,000 claims filed. So we're down, over around a third of new claims being filed, and I think that's a really good sign. The
Why is that a good sign?
Because that means that people are not filing new claims.
Mm-hmm.
That means, what we do still see is a lot of people. The trend has been we have a lot of long-term unemployed, which is pretty unusual for Iowa, people who have become unemployed and have been unable to connect with a new job. But the part of it that is good news is we're not seeing the same type of layoffs and job dislocations that we were seeing this time last year.
Mm-hmm. You talked about the long-term unemployed, many people in Iowa out of work for a long time. How long can you be out of work in Iowa and still receive benefits?
Right now, the emergency unemployment compensation that has been passed by Congress allows people to draw benefits on top of the regular state benefits, which are 26 weeks, for a total of up to 73 weeks a person can draw right now.
Joe Walsh is with us, Deputy Director, Iowa Workforce Development. So Iowa at 6.8% unemployment, how does the state compare with the rest of the nation? Where do we fit in? The U.S. having a, 9.6% unemployment rate?
Yeah, and I think that's really an excellent point, because we have the 10th lowest unemployment in the country. This is truly a national recession. This is not something that is just happening to Iowa. And even if you look, in fact, the surrounding states around us, Illinois has consistently been over 10%, Missouri's over 9%, Wisconsin over 8%. We're even lower than Minnesota. So we've really, compared to the rest of the country, we're doing a lot better.
Why are we doing a lot better, even when considering we're surrounded by other states in the Midwest doing significantly worse?
I think the thing that has made Iowa really strong historically is the fact that our economy is diversified. Most of our job losses have been in manufacturing, and if you looked at a county map breaking down the unemployment rate, you'd see that our areas of the state that rely a lot more heavily upon the manufacturing sector are the ones who have been hit the hardest. But we also have a diversified economy. We've got a strong ag economy. We've got financial sector, which has had it's had its share of hits as well. But we don't have all of our eggs in one basket.
Mm-hmm. And so when you have a diversified economy such as Iowa's, you don't hit the low lows, but you also might not hit the high highs.
That's probably fair to say. It's like having a diversified portfolio in the stock market in that sense.
Non-farm employment took a hit in August. Why was that?
Manufacturing? Yeah, I mean, that's over half of our jobs losses that we've seen in the state since the beginning of this recession have been in manufacturing. And that really was something that was speeded up with the national economic recession, but really has been a trend in this state and all throughout the Midwest since the 1980s, really.
Mm-hmm. Also, job losses brought out in the August report put out by your office, significant losses in the government sector.
Yes, and interestingly, I mean, we've seen the main area that has really remained resilient has been in healthcare and education. But we've seen, you know, we've seen government, local government, state government take hits in revenues that obviously causes shortfalls that results in layoffs sometimes.
Mm-hmm. So education and health services is a good area to be in. Talk about employment there.
Well, it's an area that has really remained strong, or even in some cases, you know, a growing field. It's some of the jobs in those areas are more technical and skill driven than some of the jobs that we've been losing, and I think that is probably accounts for a significant part of the reason of why we've seen a lot of longer term unemployed people, because there's just not the skills match that it takes to be able to get reemployed quickly.
Name a couple of jobs you absolutely, a couple of skills you absolutely want to have right now to get into this job market.
Well, I'm glad you asked that question, because that hits on one of the things that we think is a very important program that we've really been turning up the heat on here at Iowa Workforce Development. Really, there's a lot of national research that supports the idea that there's really three job skills that virtually every job needs to have. Those would be applied mathematics, reading for information, and locating information. And there's actually a test that ACT has developed to credential people in those areas. And this is what I would call, it's a basic work readiness test. It's a job that it's a test that every worker really should be able to have to show that they're ready to perform work in the competitive job market. And we offer that test and the credential through our workforce centers. It's called the National Career Readiness Certificate.
So when we look at these three skills, we should think about it as, so the economy is going to change, the specific types of jobs are going to change, but we know these skills will remain constantly in demand. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, I think that's a very fair way to say it, and I would take it a little bit further and say, what I think has not been really communicated really effectively to this point is to tell our workforce that really the old idea of economic security and job security, it just doesn't exist anymore. What we're really moving toward, and we've been moving this direction for a long time, is a skills security economy. And the only security that any worker is going to have lies in the skills that they have. And that's been the focus of workforce development since Director Liz Buck got here back in 2007, and that's the direction that we have chosen to take the agency.
Got about a minute left. What's the outlook for employment in the coming months, as far as you can tell?
Well, it's a tough economy. Nobody can lie about that. It would be inappropriate to say it's not. There's national statistics. These aren't Iowa-based statistics, but there's national statistics showing that for every job opening out there, there's at least five people for that job. So there's just not enough jobs to go around right now. But we are seeing some signs of hope. We've got over 21,000 jobs posted on our website, iowajobs.org. That are within the state here. Those are real jobs. And we've got a lot of assistance and help at our 55 workforce centers across the state. And people really should try to take advantage of our workforce system here, our public workforce system, when they're trying to get back to work.
Okay, Joe, once again, that website?
Iowa Workforce iowajobs.org is the website. We also have a subset. You can go to that and find the website, iowajobs.org, to find the specific workforce component of that.
Joe Walsh, Deputy Director of Iowa Workforce Development, thank you so much.
Thank you.
This is The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer, and we're talking about climate today, climates of many types. One of the sectors we need to gauge as we move into the fall season is housing. Carrie Jensen is the president of the Iowa Realtors Association. She's also a realtor in Council Bluffs. Good afternoon to you, Carrie.
Good afternoon.
Tell us, how would you rate the climate of the present housing market?
I would rate it as improving. We're still seeing some of the influence of the tax credit expiration, so our actual statistics are a little bit all over the board, but we're seeing consistent stabilization in housing prices, average time on the market, and those are good indicators that things are going to balance out nicely through the remainder of the year.
What is the average length of time a house is on the market?
Right at 100 days. It's been fluctuating between like 102 and 99 days on the market.
Mm-hmm. And when we had a real estate boom a few years ago, what was that number then?
You know, it has not changed a great deal. Somewhere down in the mid-90s, 95, and fluctuated up to maybe 103 or 104 days.
Okay, so that's...
apparently, as realtors, we work pretty consistently on days on the market.
Mm-hmm. And what about the prices, though? We've seen, of course, a decrease in there, not as much as other states, I don't imagine, right?
No, the average price has changed 1.3% year-to-date from last year to this year, so that's virtually unchanged, and less than 1% from July to August.
Mm-hmm. What did you see over this past summer on the housing market?
Well, we're seeing a nice inventory, increase in inventory, and price stabilization, so people aren't losing values in the homes that they are putting on the market for sale. And, of course, the declining interest rates have been a real driving factor for people that are considering home ownership at this time.
Right. Those interest rates are very low, around 4% or even less?
It definitely depends on the cost associated with the loan, but I've heard figures that the high threes for a 30-year fixed-rate mortgage.
Mm-hmm. Do you anticipate, as a realtor, president of the Realtors or Association, that they'll stay this way, or does one never know?
We're never sure, but it looks like we're probably not going to see any drastic increases in the near future. They did go up some in the last week, in the last 2 weeks, and then they're trending back down again.
So tell us about the person, the buyers who are motivated by these low interest rates. They're coming to you because they just say, this is so darn cheap, I want to get into a new house or change a house.
You know, a lot of these people are people that already own homes, so they're familiar with the current interest rates that they have on a mortgage on their current home. Typically, if they've purchased a home in the last 10 years, those rates are probably in the neighborhood of 6%, maybe between 7 and 5% anyway. So an interest rate that is even in the low fours or the upper threes is very appealing to them. They realize they can buy up in a home and really have their payment unchanged.
What if someone has a house paid off? Would it make sense with such interest rates to get a mortgage in order to get that cash?
That would definitely be a financial decision for each individual person. It's really going to depend on where they're at in their stage of life. I don't know that I would recommend that anyone go into debt to cash out their house.
Which regions, areas in the state are doing the best and worst? You said a slight improvement.
Well, it's varied. Actually, about two-thirds of the state have reported increase in the average number of sales year-to-date, and so there's a third that are showing a decline. But if I look at just the sales statistics year-to-date, last month, some of the highest percentages are in Cherokee. MLS is up 75%. Granted, there are smaller numbers because that's a smaller community, but 75% is a huge increase. There's Keokuk is up 33%, Maquoketa up 25%. Northeast Iowa Board of Realtors up 52.2%. So there's some large increases throughout the state.
In the areas that are doing best, what's behind those increases?
You know, I'm not sure because you'd probably have to do some studies on economics in those communities. I could assume it would be based on the economy in some of those communities that they have job growth, job opportunities.
On the other end of things, which areas are doing the worst, have still the most depressed housing markets?
Year-to-date, Humboldt County has reported some pretty large decreases. Benton County, nothing in the 75 percentile by any means in terms of decline. A lot of these are much smaller numbers or virtually unchanged.
You mentioned this earlier. We were hearing that the market dropped off significantly after this first-time buyer's tax incentive ended. Where do things stand today?
I think we're still seeing, because those closings have until September 30th to close, we're still seeing some of those closings come to fruition. But I think for the most part, we're on the backside of the spike created by that tax incentive. Yet we're still 3.3% above last year at the same time. And at that time, we were under the influence of that tax credit.
Hmm.
So comparing year to year, our numbers are still looking very positive.
So when you look back in retrospect, was this a worthwhile effort by the federal government, this tax incentive?
I definitely think it was a real benefit to consumers that maybe were on the fence about buying a home or knew they were going to buy, and this just accelerated the time frame in which they were going to do it. There's still a lot of value in home ownership. For a lot of people, it becomes their nest egg. It changed the market for some investment buyers or people that were looking at flipping properties because we didn't see the large appreciation numbers where they were making their profits previously.
Mm-hmm. Since prices are starting to rebound, if only slightly according to the statistics, what do you believe is behind this rebound?
I believe it's a stabilization in the market overall. I think people are, where they sat back before, maybe waited to see what was going to happen. Right now they're considering home ownership because they don't believe the interest rates are probably going to get much lower than they are at this time.
Do you want to be a buyer or a seller in this market?
Well, I can speak for that firsthand. I'm both a buyer and a seller. I closed on the purchase of a new home in July, and I'll be closing on the sale of my current home next week. So I can honestly say that it's kind of a trade-off. Even I may not have seen as much value in the home I was selling, but I think I got a better buy on the house that I was buying. So in the end, it all worked out the same.
Any tips you're advising your clients about in this market as buyers or sellers?
Particularly as a seller, this is a good time to be aggressive with your sales price. Decide what you would be happy accepting for a sale price and list your property very close to that. You'll spend less time on the market. You'll see closer sale price to list price ratio, and you'll be much happier when your house isn't sitting on the market 60 or 90 days from now. As a buyer, by the same token, you should assume those sellers are going to be aggressive on their pricing. Make sure you look at enough properties that you're comfortable with what value you can get for the price range you're looking in.
We've been hearing that some are rethinking real estate as an investment and returning to renting rather than owning. Are you seeing any of that?
Not particularly. I can only speak really about Council Bluffs as far as rentals because the state association doesn't keep statistics on rentals. There are quite a few vacancies in the apartment complexes in Council Bluffs. I still think people are buying there. The Midwest is a great place to be a homeowner and a real estate agent at this time. We've seen probably the least loss in values mm-hmm. and the least fluctuation in our sales. We're happy to be in Iowa.
What types of properties are moving best in your area there in Council Bluffs?
Residential resale in the average price range is one of the best sales statistics right now, and that's pretty common. That's just where there happens to be the most buyers.
Residential houses of all sizes?
Price range is more of a factor.
Okay.
You know, your three-bedroom home is typically the most popular sale because it fits more families, and the average price range would be, say, $130,000. Anything, give or take 5% of that price range, is typically your highest sales in the area.
What about new home sales?
New construction definitely varies from community to community. I think that some of the builders have been more cautious in speculative building. I think there's probably less new construction specs sitting on the market right now, and they're more interested in selling custom new construction because there's less risk in that market.
Carrie Jensen, what do you anticipate over the next several months of the fall as we head into the winter?
I think we'll continue to see probably the same numbers. I think the sales will remain relatively flat to where they are right now, which would be just fine with us. If we stay even with where we were last year, considering the influence of the tax credit, without any sharp drops or big increases, that would be great.
Okay, Carrie Jensen, thank you very much for this conversation. President of the Iowa Realtors Association. Thank you, Carrie, from Council Bluffs.
You're welcome. Thank you.
The Exchange is produced by Catherine Perkins and Alex Hoyer. Production assistance today from Christina Sarnelli. Technical support from Dennis Reese. The executive producer of Iowa Public Radio's talk shows is Jeff Schmidt. We always welcome your comments and questions about this program. The Exchange at iowapublicradio.org is our email. Our theme music was composed and performed by Dan Knight. The Exchange is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thank you for joining us.